Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me? Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you all for coming today. I am Representative Patty Fritz, and I am the representative from this district, which is District 26B, and I am honored and privileged to represent the people from this area. My background, of course, is nursing, and I worked here in this beautiful nursing home for a number of years, 30-something, and we'll leave it at that. So, again, thank you all for coming, and first and foremost, thank you, St. Lucas residents and staff, for hosting this event today for us. I know that I knew you would do an outstanding job, Brad, and I want to introduce to all of you folks the administrator, and my administrator at one time too, Brad Mogard. Could you just come up and say just a few words, please?
Thank you, Brad, for everything.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patty. And Patty did make it clear too that, Brad, I only have a few minutes, so I have a tendency to talk when I get an opportunity. I do want to welcome all of you. I want to welcome Patty. I want to thank Patty and the rest of our legislators for asking us to host this. It is quite an honor for us. Patty asked me to give you a little history of St. Lucas Care Center, and again, remind me to keep it brief. St. Lucas Care Center has a long, long history. There's a part of our building that was built in 1908, originally served as the hospital of Verbo, and then through the course of years or whatever was converted to long-term care. In the 70s, we built what is called the 70s unit to grow the nursing side of it, and then in the 1990s, we built the 90s unit. So we're very proud of our nursing center. Of course, what makes any nursing organization, what makes any business is the employees. And I want to take this opportunity to thank all of our employees for all the hard work they did getting this ready for us today, too. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Patty. Thank you. We've got treats and coffee. And when we're done, for those of you that want a tour, we're more than glad to, you know, give the tours throughout the facility. Thank you again for coming.
Thank you, Brad. And getting right to our agenda today, because I'd like to stay on time. We have 2 hours, from 2 to 4, so I'm hoping that in the first hour we can have our presenters come up. We have a PowerPoint presentation from the department, and then we have others that are on the agenda to present information to us down here. And that's the purpose, one of the purposes of this hearing. And it isn't a hearing, it's an informational meeting to gather and share information out in greater Minnesota about the nursing home reimbursement rates and any nursing home issues that you all may have. So without further ado, I am going to ask one of the nursing home working group folks, the legislator who is here. We're still waiting for the arrival of two more, I believe, RSVP. So I will turn it over to Representative Ken Eakin, who just flew in, and he will give a little brief data on him.
Well, thanks, Patty. And Patty's husband, Jim, was nice enough to come pick me up over at the airport. I represent an area in northwest Minnesota. And we have a lot of nursing homes in our district. They play a very important role in our communities, not just as a place to care for our senior citizens, but as a place of employment. They are major economic engines in our communities. And I understand the important role that they play, not just based on what they've done for our community, but for our own family. I have a father who's currently in the nursing home in Twin Valley. He's been suffering from Alzheimer's, and he's been in it for about 4 years now. And receives outstanding care. And it's in large part due to the fact that it's in the small town where he grew up and where I grew up. The people that are taking care of him are the people that I went to school with and grew up with. And the people that he's staying there with are people that he grew up with. So it's really much more like a family. I still remember one story. When my dad was first in the nursing home, and he was, as I said, suffering from Alzheimer's, and a woman came up to him and had mistaken him. He was in the Alzheimer's unit, and she had mistaken him for being her brother. And she came up and was saying, "Oh, it's so good to see you." And he looked at us and said, "I have a sister." And I thought, well, it is a lot like a family. And the people there, as I say, they take such good care of him. And I've seen the hard work that they do when I go in and the little compensation that they receive for that hard work. And I know why they stay there. It's because they really get a sense of doing something worthwhile and taking care of people in their community. But they can't live on this psychic income, the gratification they get of doing something good for others. They have families to take care of. And they can't live on psychic income. They need to feed their kids and take care of their families. So I hope that we can do something to ensure that those that are doing such an outstanding job taking care of our senior citizens and playing such a vital role in our communities are adequately and fairly compensated for the work they do. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I just see a couple other three representatives. Representative Laura Broad walked through and invited her to join us at the table. Representative Hosh is here. We'll hand this over to him in just a minute. Representative Thiessen, could you come up and join us as well, all the legislators? Thank you. And I do see, I thought I saw our former representative, Ray Cox, also in the audience. Thank you for coming. I'm going to hand this to you, Lynn, and if you could give just your name and your district and a brief presentation.
I'm Representative Larry Hosh. I represent District 14B, and what that really means is I represent Central Minnesota, just the communities to the west of St. Cloud, such as St. Joseph, Haynesville, Eden Valley, Pimple, Clearwater, and several other communities in between. Nursing home funding, for me, is very important. Actually, one of the predicaments that we're in, you could blame as a result of my district, which is Stearns County. We had special legislation to move us into a new geographic category. But within my district, that creates a problem too, because the Painesville area healthcare system has nursing homes in Stearns County and in Meeker County. And I have a home where it's 50 yards away from the county line, and yet being part of the same healthcare system, they get a completely different reimbursement rate. And it's those challenges and inequities that is the reason that we're here today. Inequities is an important problem for us to address, but also just the funding aspects overall. We don't have enough money into the system to make sure that our nursing homes are solvent. And it's an issue that we have to bring to the forefront. And through forums like this and through your testimony, it's so very important, because we often get dragged down by a lot of other very important issues, whether it be education or transportation, healthcare for more Minnesotans, but we also have to make sure that our nursing homes aren't put on the wayside or the back burner. So hopefully we can make this a priority for the next legislative session. Representative Fritz, Representative Eakin, and the representatives here with Representative Thiessen and Broad, we have been fighting for that recognition, but we're competing against a lot of other justifiable causes, but they've been doing a wonderful, wonderful job, and I'm proud to be here today.
Thank you, Representative. I'm going to send this down to Representative Broad, and who's a neighbor of ours, and she'll tell you what district she represents. Thank you for coming.
Sure, I'll be very quick. I actually don't serve on this working group, but obviously wanted to make sure that I was a part of the discussion and listening to what was being said here today. So I'm Representative Laura Broad. I serve District 25A, and so I'm just to the northwest of where you guys are at. In fact, we often are down here in Faribault for hockey games and all sorts of things like that with my kids. So in fact, I used to be here for 4-H as well. So I know the area quite well. And in regards to nursing home fundings, it's something that we've all been fighting and trying to make sure that we're doing in the right way. Another thing in regards to nursing homes that we all have to be very careful of is, you know, do you really think that the legislators know better how things should operate than the administrators and the people who are working in these nursing homes? So regulations and not over-regulating is something that I know has been on the table, and I know there's been some adjustment made over the past number of years, but that's something that we need to watch very, very carefully as well. I personally serve on a nursing home board for the advisory committee for the Arlington Good Samaritan Center nursing home, so I'm not only policymaker on the state level, but I understand how it hits the ground. You know, all you have to do is look around and talk to anybody in your communities to know that somebody is touched by what nursing homes do for their family, for their friends, for their neighbors. So thank you for being here. Thanks for talking about this important issue. There's a lot of agreement on this issue in the legislature, it's one of those issues, actually, that is really refreshing because there is that agreement. And now what we need to do is make sure that agreement picks the priority up where it should be.
I'm State Representative Paul Thiessen and from Minneapolis, and I also represent Richfield. And I'm the chair of the Health and Human Services Policy Committee, and so I don't serve on the working group, but I wanted to come down and listen to what everybody had to say today. I'll just reiterate, it is a critically important issue. I do want to thank Patty, though, for the work that she's done on this issue. She's been really a tireless advocate for the workers and for nursing homes in general, and really brings a true kind of personal passion to the issue that's very refreshing. So thanks for all the work on this and for hosting this today, and I look forward to hearing from everybody.
Thank you, Representative. I think we do talk too much at times, so I'm not going to do that. We're going to get right to our agenda because we do have folks in the audience from many areas. AARP, IC is here, we have Ombudsman, all sorts of folks who want to weigh in and speak to us in the last hour. So without further ado, I would like to invite Bob Hell from the Department of Human Services to begin his presentation. And Bob, if you would. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I was asked to give some background on how the nursing home payment system works, a few other payment issues, and in particular to give some statistics about disparities in nursing home payment rates. And I think the main reason for talking about some of the history is to give people a bit of an understanding about how the disparities that do exist came about. The nursing home payment system goes back to the beginning of the medical assistance program in 1965. But I'm not going to bore you with 42 years of history. I felt that 22 years of history was probably sufficient. Back in 1985, the state enacted what was called Rule 50. And Rule 50 was a cost-based system. It set what were called prospective rates. And that was a change from what we had previously. A prospective rate is when the state says, this is what your rate is going to be, this is how much you will be paid into the future, and that's the end of the story. However, that was a change from what had been in place previously, where there was retrospective adjustments of rates. So previously, if there had been costs that had increased the facility could get a settlement payment, that went away as far back as 1985. The system did recognize inflation. It had automatic growth in what was reported. So there were costs that were reported. Inflation factors were applied and were used with resident days to come up with a daily rate. If a facility chose to spend more money than it was taking in, then its costs would reflect that, and 21 months later, when they received a new rate, it would reflect those additional costs. The system did have limits, however, and those limits were based on geography. In about 1995, there was a state budget crisis, and the state imposed a couple of new limits in the system. And at that time, they also created what was called the Alternative Payment System, APS. Before I get into APS, however, I just wanted to show you the geographic groups of Rule 50. Rule 50 set limits, and it used a statistical measure of spending by facilities. And it did it for each of three geographic groups. Group one is the yellow group, sort of yellowish-greenish group, and that's what we call deep rural. And group three is what was called metro, and that's shown in blue. For some reason that I've never understood, Coochin County and Cook County were considered metro, whereas Stearns County was not. That's a categorization that was done in legislation, thank you. we do have almost enough people in the room to change these laws, by the way. The alternative payment system is a voluntary system. Facilities initially had to apply to come into APS. And under APS, it was a sort of a do not ask, do not tell system. Facilities no longer had to tell the state this is how much money we spent. And the state did not set a rate based on that. Instead, it just took your historic rate per facility and said, okay, we're going to just do inflation on that. And the automatic inflation was part of that system. The intent of that was to get away from having the state use complex, very detailed rules to micromanage how the facilities spent their money. Instead, the intent was to focus on quality and to say, why don't you just use the money the way you see fit to best achieve the goals of your facility, which is to provide quality. The rate had two elements, an operating portion and a property portion. The inflation applied to both. However, the system almost never played out the way it was intended. From almost the very beginning, the legislature chose to set aside the automatic inflation and do something else instead. Almost every year since then, what the legislature has chosen to do has been in an amount greater than inflation. There were 2 years where the legislature, again facing a budget crisis, chose to not provide any inflation and in fact cut back other payment mechanisms by a small amount. So the last time the automatic inflation actually applied was 1998. In 1999, the state decided to actually have the legislative inflation factors apply to everybody. So the voluntary APS facilities got the automatic inflation, got a special inflation larger than the automatic one would have been. And the facilities that had not chosen to come into the alternative were treated the same way. So from that point on, everybody's rates for operating costs is everything that you spend for your staff and your utilities and your food and cleaning chemicals, everything that the facility spends to operate was based on inflation factors that came from legislation applied to what their rate had previously been. Now, what their rate had previously been was based on costs, and those costs were limited by what facilities were spending in their geography. So if one facility was in a district that had lower spending, they would have lower limits. And even if they spent that much, that's as much as they could get. And so what began to emerge was that in some parts of the state, the rates that were paid to nursing homes by the state were lower than they were in other parts of the state. In 2005, there was legislation enacted that encouraged facilities to come into APS and put everybody formally into the rate on rate system, and all facilities did in fact do that at that time. So are there disparities in rates? Do facilities in fact have the same rates throughout the state, or do they have different rates? What this chart shows you is how much on average rates differ from the average rates per year. And in fact, in 99, 2000 through 2002, the differences declined. But they only came down to a difference of about 11%, which is still pretty substantial. That's the average difference. And then they began to edge up just slightly to about 12.5%. By geographic group, remember I showed you the map of the state with geographic groups 1, 2, and 3. Geographic group, on average, has rates that are less than geographic group 3. Those differences back in 99 were about 16%. It's got a little bit better, got up to about 12% less, again, similar to what that other chart showed, and then have started to go down a little bit. So this is saying that geographic group 2, that's the purple line on that chart, has rates that are about 88% of the metro area. For some reason, when I copied this graph onto the PowerPoint, the explanation for the black line disappeared, and I tried it about four times. But you do the same thing four times, you get the same result. It's a computer, right? So with the bottom one, it represents as geographic group one as a percent of geographic group three. And so you can see geographic group one has, on average, the lowest payment rates, and geographic group two is in the middle, and on average, geographic group three, the metro area, has rates that are higher than those. So that, to me, provides some pretty strong evidence that there are significant disparities in rates by geography. There were about five other issues that I wanted to touch on also briefly, because they're issues that I think people are aware of and may or may not have a deep understanding of: rate equalization, case mix, the surcharge, rebalancing, and the report card. Rate equalization is a law that Minnesota's had since the early 1980s, and what it says is that a nursing facility cannot charge a private paying person more than the rate set by Medicaid. It has an exception for rooms that have single beds, single bedrooms. If there's only one bed in the room, then the facility is exempted from that law. There's also a provision in that law that talks about special services. So if the facility wants to have some kind of a special service, which might be deviant telephone in your room or all kinds of things that could be designed, they can charge additional amounts for those as long as they're not services or items that must be included in the daily rate that are paid for that way and that are required by law to, or rule to be provided by the facility. And then the rate equalization law also has a non-discrimination provision which says that facilities cannot discriminate in admission, retaining residents, and room assignment based on their status with regard to public assistance. Back in 1985, Minnesota set up a case mix system. We were one of the first states to do this. It was a homegrown case mix system. And what it does is it says that we're going to take the average cost of the facility, but we're going to have, at that time, 11 and now 34 case mix groups, now called RUGS groups. And for people that need the least care or whose care requires the least amount of resources, there'll be a lower rate than for people who have the most requirements. So there's a whole range of rates that are established, and residents are assessed for the kind of needs that they have in order to assign a group. In 2002, the state dropped its homegrown case mix system in favor of the state or the federally designed RUGS system. RUGS stands for Resource Utilization Groups, and it's a federal system. It uses the federal, what's called the MDS or minimum data set assessment form. It's an assessment form that's quite lengthy, and that all facilities are required by federal law to use. So when the state made this transition, there had been a state-designed assessment form, and then there was a federal assessment form that repeated a lot of the items, but did them a little bit differently. And so facilities had to use two assessment forms and how to categorize everybody. They had to conduct them, and the state had to come in and audit those assessment forms. We dropped the whole state assessment form at that time. Statewide, we eliminated approximately 105 assessments per year, 105,000 assessments per year. In 2004, the state conducted a staff time measurement study that was designed to determine what the weights for each of the 34 groups would be, and that will be phased in over the next several years along with the new payment system. And that new system will be called basic. The next area is the surcharge. This is a healthcare tax, and it's a tax that applies to nursing home beds. Every nursing home with a licensed nursing home bed in the state pays a tax to the state government on those beds. The tax is currently $2,815 per bed per year, which comes down to about, I think, $7.75. and then the nursing home has a component of its rate designed to, in general, make up for the cost of paying that tax. Minnesota has long been an overbedded state as regards nursing homes. Back in the 80s, we had the sixth highest number of beds of any state in the country, fifth or sixth, in terms of the number of beds per 1,000 people age 65 and older. The problem with that is that many people ended up in nursing homes who could have been served in a less restrictive setting and who would have desired to be served in that manner. And so the state has long had a desire to see the system rebalanced. That's why there was a moratorium established in the early 80s to say that nobody can add a nursing home bed in the state except by permission of the legislature. But after that, and pre-admission screening, beginning to fund home and community-based services, and so on, in 2000, the state enacted a law called layaway to sort of help facilities adjust to what was really a shifting marketplace where occupancy rates were going down and facilities were reluctant to de-license beds, but it was their only option in order to keep their occupancy percentage up. And there were some incentives in the payment system for keeping occupancy up. And so the layaway law was passed, which said if you put beds like putting them in the bank, you can have them back for 5 years, but there'll be certain financial advantages to putting them in the bank during that 5-year period. If you want to, you can put them back into active service up to 5 years. After that, they're gone altogether. In 2001, the legislature passed a program called Plant Closures, which provided additional financial incentives for closing nursing home beds. And in 2005, a third incentive, the single bed incentive, was enacted, giving facilities additional financial benefits for closing a bed if it resulted in the creation of a single. So if a 2-bed room had 1 bed closed, there would be a financial incentive that the facility could get for doing that. And my final topic is the Nursing Home Report Card, which began in 2006. This is the only information I'm going to provide today on it, so it's very brief. But the idea here is that for people who are thinking about going to a nursing home or who are thinking about helping a loved one select a nursing home, there's a state report card that's on the web that people can look at to compare nursing homes. And it has 7 different quality measures in it that are implemented or measured in a very standard way across all nursing homes in the state. So it gives you a very fair and level comparison. However, many people who are interested in seeing a report card already have a loved one in the nursing home. So this is useful to them also, we hope, because they can look at it and they can see, well, our nursing home, where are we doing well and where are we not doing so well? And that can be a basis for advocacy efforts that they may want to conduct within the nursing home. And finally, we hope that providers will use it as a way of seeing how they compare on a level playing field measurement set with other nursing homes in their area. Many providers have commented, gee, you know, we thought we were like the very best home around in regard to this measure, but we actually are doing poorer than average. So we know that we need to work on getting better in that particular area. And with that, I'm going to hand it back to Patty.
Thank you. Very good information. Thank you so much for that. And then I want to ask that Iris Freeman, the Seniors and Workers Group, come up. We're hopefully staying right on task here so that we can get to the questions from all of you. I hope this is good information.
Well, since Bob is working there, would it be all right if I perch here? Thank you, everyone. I'm going to keep these notes close at hand in order to fast forward through them and keep to the chair's time guidelines. My name is Iris Freeman, and this summer I passed my 30th year in long-term care as an ombudsman, as a trainer, as an agency executive, as an advocate for people with Alzheimer's disease. I'm very glad today to be speaking on behalf of Seniors and Workers for Quality, a coalition of seniors organizations and direct care workers who work singularly on the topic of staffing in long-term care. Staffing is highly dependent on reimbursement, and so it is most appropriate to speak to those issues today. Now, ordinarily, when I'm teaching or training, I have a set of slides. I do not have a set of slides today because every issue, every experience that I'll summarize quickly today is one that is very familiar, I know and fear, to people in this audience. In fact, staffing is kind of a cleaned up word for the ways that working short feel to us as family members, to residents, and to staff. I mean, I think when I think about staffing, what I'm really thinking about is a resident who has always been a very private person, a very dignified and proud person. And she is shamed beyond description because her bed is wet, because there just wasn't anybody who could come and help as quickly. Several other people needed help at the same time, and she is mortified, this old and dignified woman. I think about situations in which residents are counting on staff who are themselves so absorbed in their family's critical issues that they can't possibly stop to chit-chat and smile. And certainly as a family member, I think about those instances of arriving at mealtime to see mother trying to eat, mushing one food into the other because there's nobody to help. Staffing is about human relationships. It's easy to talk about staffing in terms of ratios and criteria and data, but it's about human relationships. Another point I would want to make today, because I've worked for seniors organizations so long, is that this issue relates to public payment, but seniors are also payers for long-term care, direct payers paying from their life savings just as long as they can. And like public officials, seniors desire good value for their money. But we have long argued that private payers don't want to have to make up for the insufficiency in state and federal decisions by having to pay a surcharge on their daily rate or having to pay an unequal rate, again, to make up for the shortfalls in decisions of others. There are three important messages that seniors and workers bring to you and summarize with you today. One, that mending the long-term care reimbursement system, the crisis, in fact, can't be done without that overall planning for a sound long-term care system for the future cohort of older Minnesotans. The chair and I reach Medicare age in about 2 years. We think about these things. Second, quality care and quality jobs are inseparable. I'll probably say that again, even though we don't have much more time. Third, achieving value in long-term care in the system requires us to think about and to achieve staff training and staff retention, because turnover alone is a waste of money. It is always a waste of money. Let me say just a little bit more about each. Nursing home reimbursement is a big enough issue to tackle on its own, but it's hard to make good policy for nursing home payments without looking at the care system as a whole and the share of the budget that is properly right for nursing homes. There's been a bit of downsizing, more willy-nilly than planned, and sometimes it seems that that downsizing has occurred because of a subtle message from state and federal governments that we're going to starve the beast. We can do better than that. We can do it through planning, and we can assure that people have the kinds of residences and services to meet their chronic care needs in the future. Second, quality care and quality jobs are inseparable for us. We can't continue doing what we're doing. In home care in nursing home care, in community care, on a false hope that there is an absolutely unending supply of people, mostly women, who will be willing to do backbreaking jobs at little pay. We can't keep counting on that. The world has changed. Every reimbursement system has its incentives. And it takes excellent employers to make the most of those. But we don't have what it takes in the reimbursement system today to make quality jobs in long-term care direct services. There is on the table as you come in a chart of cost of living information from around the state, from clusters of counties around the state, and I hope you'll take a look at that. Third, it's modern to talk about outcomes in care. What it doesn't matter so much what kinds of pieces you put into the pie. How did it turn out? Well, you know, maybe we should be looking at the outcomes of the reimbursement system we have now, because in fact we have dissatisfied residents and families, dissatisfied staff, dissatisfied state officials. There must be something that we need to do differently. And the outcomes in terms of satisfaction aren't there, and it's not for want of trying. There are many people in this room who have devoted many years to trying to get it right. But the fact remains that turnover is too high. And using a survey that a researcher named Seavey did for the American Healthcare Association long ago, a colleague in the staffing field calculated that in Minnesota alone, just a few years ago, $54 million was wasted on the cost of turnover. $30,200 nursing assistants with roughly a 51% turnover rate, and estimating the cost of about $3,000 to $3,500 in training and retraining and in advertising and whatnot. Those dollars were lost to the system when, in fact, we could have been using them to build careers to deliver quality care. What's especially alarming is that turnover, as you know, is highest in the first 90 days of employment. And so in order to break those cycles, we need to look at those issues, issues of training, issues of insurance, issues of both wages and benefits, in order to ensure that people can make these jobs careers and deliver the quality care that we're looking for. I have used my time. I thank you for your attention. I know that when these issues get to legislative proposals, the challenge is that we wind up talking about budgets in millions and billions. It costs a lot to care for so many individuals. But when we come down to the money set aside for the care of any single individual resident by the staff who care for her or him, we're talking about an average of $100, $135 a day, which is pretty much what you pay at a Holiday Inn in the Twin Cities for much, much, much less service and care and human relationship than we need in long-term care. So I thank you, and I yield the microphone.
Thank you.
Thank you, Iris. And I now want to introduce John Lips from Care Providers. And we've worked closely with the care provider folks at the Capitol and hope to continue that relationship. Thank you, John, for coming.
Thank you, Representative Fritz. I will be as brief as I can. I assure you, the people at this table hear from me more often than they'd like already. And I think the real value of coming down to Faribault, and later we'll be going to Representative Eakin's district perhaps, is to hear from people that are working on these issues firsthand, day in and day out. So I'll be very brief. There was a handout at the front table from me as well. My name is John Lips. I'm a lobbyist for Care Providers of Minnesota, which is a provider trade association. And I'm here today also on behalf of my co-worker, Carrie Thurlow, who works with the Minnesota Health and Housing Alliance. Our two associations work together collaboratively on legislative issues that impact long-term care under a name that we call the Long-Term Care Imperative, so that the handout you have that comes from us has that logo on the front page. And I just want to make a few very brief sort of general remarks. I won't be probably talking even about every slide, so just bear with me as I move through this fairly quickly. Facilities have needs in the near term. Everybody at this table knows that. I think their purpose this fall and extending back into the summer is to gather information to be as fully informed as they can about the problem that we're facing. Everybody knows there's a problem in the abstract, and everybody knows that it would take a lot of money to make a really big, meaningful change in the system. And so the challenge is to figure out what is the right solution. And so they're going to spend a lot of time, and we applaud them for doing so, trying to gather facts. But we do like to provide a little bit of data just to help to demonstrate the problem. There isn't enough money coming into the system. And part of the way we describe that at the association office is to talk about a shortfall between the Medicaid funding level and the amount that it costs to care for people. So one of the pieces of data that we provide to the legislature relates to that funding shortfall. And there's a national organization that does a study on this every year for the past 6 years. And the study that has just been released projects that for 2007, the shortfall per resident day is about $25. So the state of Minnesota in the Medicaid program is paying on average about $25 per day less than it costs the nursing facility to deliver the care. And in that regard, Minnesota, according to the study and the projections for 2007, is the fourth worst in the nation. We have the fourth largest gap of any of the states in the U.S. And so it's important. That's one of the data items that we like to put forward to the state. That's not the total amount of money that comes in, as you know better than me. There are other revenue sources, Medicare and third-party payers and so on. But it's very important to be aware that over the course of time, the state policy concerning payments to nursing homes has allowed that gap to get a little bit wider and a little bit wider every year. So that's one of the pieces of data that is in the packet. And that shortfall is really important. As you know, it's painful. One of the slides that's also, I would say that is impossible to read, I think, on the handout that you have, shows steps that have been taken to manage the funding shortfall over the past 24 months. And I know there are nursing home providers in the room today who will be talking about that in more detail and have plenty of their own anecdotes, so I won't dwell on this, but a variety of strategies that facilities have used to try to maintain their fiscal stability. They partly relied on Medicare, as you can see. They've reduced staffing hours. This is an issue that's important to everybody, not only to the employee representatives, but to the employers as well, and to consumers. They've reduced direct and indirect staffing time. They've cut benefits, they've laid off staff, et cetera. So this is a very important issue, the Medicaid funding shortfall. But one of the slides also shows that there are significant workforce issues here. The slide shows that there's a discrepancy, or a difference in terms of what hospitals and nursing homes can pay RMs. And it shows a difference of $34.80 on average and $23 on average in the nursing home. And not that wages and benefits are the only thing that allow you to attract and retain good staff from a nursing home standpoint, but it's one of the most important things our members tell us anecdotally. So if they have less money to pay wages and benefits, they're less likely to be able to recruit RNs to come and work in their buildings. And it's something one of my colleagues here today, I know, is going to talk about a little bit as well. So in terms of effects, there are all kinds of effects on nursing homes from the underfunding of the Medicaid program. Last year, the Long-Term Care Imperative brought forward a proposal to the legislature for their consideration that was designed to close the gap between what Medicaid pays and what it costs to care for those residents. And the proposal was called rebasing. Mr. Held mentioned that term a while ago. And without going into all of the details, what ultimately passed out of the legislature, due to a variety of circumstances and budgetary constraints that the members were faced with, what passed does not resemble the original proposal. There are a number of things about it that are different from the way it was introduced, And in fact, it, as the legislation emerged from the legislature, it doesn't close the funding gap. One of the slides that's in the packet, which is in black and white, so very difficult to discern, but it shows, looking ahead into 2008, 09, 10, 11, and 12, what level of funding could be expected by nursing homes under the legislation as it emerged. This year, for October 1st, 2007, all of the nursing homes will be getting a cost of living adjustment, just like we've been used to kind of year in and year out for many, many years. And on average, it will be 2% for nursing homes. But in October of 2008, what the legislation has done is instead of giving a COLA to nursing homes, it provides a blended rate which begins to implement the rebasing proposal. And it's complicated to explain and not worth our time today considering how many others have comments to make. But in fact, although the total amount of money being injected into the system next year on average gives about 2%, there will be many, many nursing facilities under the language as it emerged that will get far less than that. Not 2%, not even 1%, but many facilities that will wind up getting less than that because there is no COLA and the rebasing is being implemented only in a minimal way. So there'll be opportunities when we get to the solutions part of the discussion later in the fall to analyze those issues more and figure out what we can do about it. So the funding situation, as bad as it has been in nursing homes, if nothing changes in the law the way it is now after the 2007 session, will actually become worse. And it's not correct to think that all nursing homes will be getting 2% in the current budget cycle. That's not how we wound up. So that's the rebasing topic that I want to talk about. And then I'll just wrap up by saying that there are many other issues. Representative Thiessen, among others, and Ira Scriven, who's here, we know that you can't only try and solve the nursing home problem. I know we're in a nursing home today, that's the purpose of the meeting, but somehow, if you can just appreciate the challenge that that these folks face, not only do we have to solve the nursing home problem, but we need to do so, and Mr. Held mentioned this as well, by being mindful that there are non-nursing home alternatives that many consumers prefer, and we need a steady supply and affordable at that of the non-nursing home alternatives. There are individuals who don't want to live in any formal setting. They want to live in their own homes, and we have to grapple with those issues. In addition to all of that, we know that it's the buildings themselves, besides just the staffing costs that we've talked about, the buildings themselves are in need of repair. The way the dollars are distributed leaves a portion, but not all, but a portion of the money every year to pay for non-staffing costs, and those are important too. So it's just a really large problem. It's not a nursing home provider problem only, or an employee only problem, or a consumer only problem, or a Democratic problem, or a Republican problem. It's going to take a group such as is represented in this room today to solve this problem. So I just thank you for the opportunity, and to Representative Fritz for spearheading the conversation, and I'll yield back to the chair. Thank you.
We have been joined by one other legislator and another neighbor of ours to the north, David Bly, Representative Bly. I'm going to have you introduce yourself and say something briefly because we are on time. And before 3 o'clock, we want to open it up to the public. We have public testifiers here from all walks of life that want to speak. So, Representative Bly.
I'll try to be brief. Sorry for being late. I represent Northfield over to Belle Plain, which is District 25B. Have three very good nursing homes in my district, and hope to represent them very well in the coming session. The Northfield Retirement Center, Three Links, and the Lutheran Home in Belle Plain. Maybe that's all I need to say.
Very good. Well, thank you, David. Thank you all to all the presenters. I think that was a lot of information and all very good information, a wide range of information, too, that was covered. So they will stick around for questions later or after this, I'm sure. And also, Brad has been good enough to give those of you who want a tour of this beautiful facility a tour as well. So, but right now, we want to open this up to the public. We do have a list of folks that about, I believe, six or so that want to testify from different areas in not only this district, but throughout. So I understand that we do have Neil Witzel from the Cedarview Care Center. And the way, could you come up, Neil, and give your testimony here at the podium? And I hope if everybody's comfortable with that, We'd like you to come up and, when it's your time to testify, and then we are also available for questions after. Thank you.
My name is Dale Witzel. I'm the director of nursing at Cedarview Care Center in Owatonna, Minnesota. And January 31st, 2007, I did testify before the House of Representatives Committee of Health and Human Services. So I was up there on behalf of Senator Swigum, or Representative Swigum, speaking at that time. I want to say briefly that I did hear a lot of your committee at that time was a very large group of people that heard testimony that day, Republican, Democratic, whoever it was, independent. They all felt the need that we had to make changes in the nursing home system and the reimbursement system. And I was energized when I left there that day, but frankly, when Governor Plenty and the final budget got put together, I was demoralized. And my staff at the facility frankly feel the same way. 1.87% increase, which when everything's all said and done, relates down to about a 1.29% increase in wages. It's basically a lot of our staff felt it was a kick in the teeth. But it's a start. And rebasing is where I think we need to go. It needs to be changed. It needs to be retuned. But I've got a couple things here that I did give Representative Fritz one, and I'll put my stuff in the slide up. I would ask that you give one to each of the people at the table, please. Frankly, I've done a little research of my own and have made a pretty good presentation at the committee hearing. I just took some of the nursing homes in our area, and I have heard testimony today saying there is disparity in reimbursement. And there actually is, I believe it's 36 reimbursement rates, rug levels in Minnesota. I've got this handout I gave you is of about six homes. One is Dodge Center, Fairview Home. One is St. Lucas here in Faribault. Another one is in Sternville, a home down there. Our facility in Owatonna, Cedarview, and one at White Bear Lake, another one up at Golden Valley. And there is a very large disparity between nursing home rates. If you just pick the RAB, you other folks don't have this, but you'll have this in a handout for you. The RAB rate there on the top in the middle, at a particular one home there on the first page, it's $154.40 a day. It is rehab rate, medium daily activity level on that one. If you look at the Faribault one, they're $159. Sturville, $167. Owatonna, $155. So they're all pretty equal. But then we get to the metro area. Those same rate increases there. This one's $177 for an RAB, and Golden Valley's $191. A little disparity of about $35 to $50 a day difference. Now, you take that amount of money, that's 365 days times, well, let's see, maybe 100 residents in a nursing home. If that kind of disparity is there, anywhere from $15 to $25 to $50 a day difference, that's a lot of money. Most nursing homes, if our facility, I did some numbers last year, if our nursing home had that kind of money, another $15-$20 a day, we could do a lot of things with our staff. We could do a lot towards retention, training, and whatever else. So there is a large disparity there, and that's just the point I wanted to make with that. Moving right along, please, legislators, look at that and see what you can do. Infrastructure. One nursing home I talked to in southeastern Minnesota, I was at a meeting a couple months ago. Administrator says he's bought a facility around 40 beds. Their occupancy rate was down to 29-30. They were down several beds, and he says, honestly, he says, if we don't get this increase in the disparity, he says, I don't think we'll be here next year. He says, we're going to lose about $1 million this year. And that was their reserve that they had on hand was about $1.5 million. So what's going to happen to these facilities? We're probably going to end up seeing more facilities closed, and then we're probably going to see more regionalized nursing homes. I don't know if that's the way of the future, but it's very possible. Another thing that I've seen recently in the nursing home business, and I've been in healthcare for 32 years, is I've seen more staff coming in with history of drug use and they pass the background checks, they do everything else, and all of a sudden you see narcotics starting to disappear. Okay? Or, so-and-so really has got more pain tonight, so I had to give him 2 tablets. Things like that. So I would caution other facilities here that are here today, be on the lookout for that, because there's nurses out there that are doing this, and they're recycling back and forth between our nursing homes. The Board of Nursing is so overworked themselves that the information hasn't been provided to them on some of these people. I have one case that I turned in that's been, I think it's about 6 to 8 months, and they still have not closed the investigation on that individual. So that person is out there today, still working in facilities, doing the same thing. Another thing that I see a lot of staff turnover, and that was one of the things that was talked about, and we spent a lot of money on orientation of the staff to see them within a short period of time go back out the door. There are some things that are going on right now that are really on the cutting edge to help us fight that. One of the things that some of the communities around are seeing is a group put together through workforce. It's called Healthcare Academy. Healthcare Academies is a program that's a pre-CNA program that brings people in out of workforce and those that are looking for work that want to go into a healthcare career. It brings them in, it puts them through a training, basically shows them what it would be like to be a CNA, teaches them medical terminology and some of the basic things along that line, pays their wages, pays their expenses while they're doing this, and it also helps to form a better attitude towards healthcare and what the job is really like, so that there is not people that end up going through the HCA don't end up having that kind of turnover then if they use those facilities. So the facilities use those type of people. Albert Lee Austin has some good programs going. Rochester does, Caledonia. I believe Wabasha also has one. So there's some other districts around that are using HCA. And if you're interested in it or have questions about it, please get in touch with Workforce and they can tell you more about it. But we're looking at starting a program in Owatonna with some of the other nursing homes there. Another trend of the future is going to be cultural change that's coming up. It's the cutting edge thing, universal workers. That's where it's going to be at. CNA is becoming more than just CNAs. They're going to be doing housekeeping work, dietary work, more in the community setting. And you'll see as time goes on, that's where nursing homes are going to end up going. Retention, I don't know. There's facilities out there today that I know of that have 50, 60 residents and either have one nurse on the night shift or they have no nurses on the night shift and they've got to have nurses stay from one shift to cover the nights, and other ones come in early at 2 a.m. in the morning, 4 a.m. in the morning, whatever, working 12, 16-hour days to cover the night shift. There's one here not too far away from here that's had that same experience. They just can't seem to hang on to those staffing. So we do need to do something in the industry to get better wages, to get better benefits, to retain those people, and it's a disastrous effect. So with that, I'll let somebody else talk, but I just wanted to thank you for allowing me to come today and testify on behalf of the people in the nursing home industry.
Our next testifier is Thomas Severson, the regional director for the Evangelical Lutheran Good Samaritan Society. Did I get that right? Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. I have the privilege of serving 17 different communities in southern Minnesota with a variety of long-term care services available. And some of the issues that I hear over and over again from my administrators go back to what we've been talking about today, the total dollars that are available, and how that is having direct impact on our residents, and the people who we have working with us to serve our residents. The other thing that hasn't been talked a lot about today is our buildings. And as we all think about this, as we age, we think about what kind of services do we want to have in the future. And I don't think anyone who is here today would get up and say that they want to share a room with another person, whether it be a friend or a stranger. I am happy to see that now there are some mechanisms in which we can make improvements to our facilities, but for so long with the APS system, we have not had that ability. So we are playing catch up. We have to think about the future and what people are going to want and demand. I've heard the statement that as the baby boomers come along, they're going to want the Cadillac version, but will only be able to afford the Chevy. And I think that's very true. The other thing that we have that is impacting us on a great scale is just our general increases, whether it be food, we have surcharges on deliveries, insurance is going up tremendously. We are a self-insured group. Our insurance rates are going up 10%. And when we have increases for our staff that are much less, that's eaten up just with insurance costs if they want to be covered with insurance. So I just appreciate your willingness to look at this area. I'm afraid if something doesn't happen soon, there will be unintended consequences in some communities where there won't be services in the future in skilled settings. I hear that more and more from other providers. The other thing that hasn't been mentioned is in the rural areas, the effect of critical access hospitals. And I was talking to a VP of a hospital chain, and he shared with me that the gravy train of critical access is coming to an end. I think the federal government is starting to see when the payments are 3 to 4 times higher for the same skilled service in a hospital versus a nursing facility, they're not going to want to continue doing that. And my only comment back to him was that I hope that that happens sooner than later, because if it doesn't, we won't have the nursing facility beds for you to discharge to, and then you'll have those people in your acute care beds. So thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. And we're going to go down, skip down the agenda a little bit, because I do want to hear from a couple of workers, direct care workers. We do have them. They put in a long day already. They put their 8 hours in. I do know that we do have from St. Lucas, and I want to welcome her and ask her to come up, and that's Dusty Catterwick, who has worked here at St. Lucas. She can tell you for how long. She's a certified nursing assistant and an excellent one, and I'm honored to have her come and speak to us today. Thank you, Dusty.
Thank you. I've worked at St. Lucas for 27 years, and I just want everyone to know that it's very, very hard work, but almost everyone that works here at St. Lucas, and I'm sure at every nursing home, doesn't do it for the pay. They do it because they care, and they love the old people. They're like our family. I'm also here to talk about the affordable health care. We're having trouble with health care, as everyone knows, everyone is. But when we are making such low wages, it's very hard for us to pay out of our own pockets our insurance rates. It's a big issue, so we really wish that you would look at that. Also, working at the nursing home, like I said, is a very fulfilling job, and we really enjoy it. But it is mentally and physically draining and stressful, and so we feel that legislature does need to look at that and up the wages, because like everyone else has said here, when you get, 1 to 2%, it doesn't, cut our cost of living either. We're having trouble making our ends meet too. I don't want to go on, because it sounds like everyone's kind of covered what I would like to, because it's all the same, but it's the wages and the insurance, taking care of our old people, because someday we're all going to get there. And that's the issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Dusty, how long have you worked? That's a career. She came to work for us when she was, I believe, 16. I think it was legal. Next we have an LPN, a licensed practical nurse, and is it Sonia Lemeyer? Is that correct? Could you come up to the podium? Welcome to the committee, and please proceed with your testimony.
Okay, thank you. Like you said, I'm Sonia Lemeyer. I come from Buffalo, Minnesota, which is in Wright County, and my main purpose was just to see
how this kind of all went. I've not been involved in any kind of testimonial information type meeting before. But I'm also real concerned because we have been going to the table with our employer over the past 20 years even, and gone through all the different stages with the APS systems and the COLA and all that kind of stuff. And recently, every time we go, the past 3 or 4 years now, it is with the cost of living issue, which stays at the 2%, plus we went through the moratorium about 3 years ago with nothing. And when that breaks down, that's their total package. It breaks down into wages and benefits of 1.75 is what we have this year. And there is no way you can squeeze the dime and the nickel to either go to better health care benefit or the 15 cents to go on for your gasoline money to get to and from work. So another issue that we have there is we are considered a rural reimbursement county, and we are part of not the 7-county metro range reimbursement, but when you talk about metro areas, often metro is referred to in the 11-county area, and so we are 10 miles from Hennepin County, and so we run into the same issue like you talked about in Greenville. And just this past year, it went up into Stearns County, into the Alfred Guardian Angels Home, and so we also are losing our employees to go to work for those places. Also, we are losing our employees right in our town. We have an Amina hospital there with an Amina clinic and another regular doctor clinic. And so our aides go there, and we lost 5 in the last 6 weeks, and they each are making $2 to $3 more an hour with better medical benefits. We lost 5 RNs also in the last 6 weeks, and they are making the $11 to $13 more an hour. So we're in a crisis where we sit. That's all I wanted to bring forward.
And we do have a couple other testifiers, but I just wanted to add to that that we just lost an LPN from St. Lucas to the Alliance Clinic, who happens to be my daughter, who was an LPN working here at St. Lucas. And she is moved to the Alliance Clinic for better benefits, and we'll miss her. I also wanted to add that in my years here at St. Lucas, the past 35 years that I worked, I have given back 10% of my wages twice. And I think Dusty was in on one of those deals that we gave back 10% to keep the place open. So, you know, we've really taken giant steps backwards, and we've tried to hang on and stay above water, and now we're all in the same boat together, so hopefully we can solve this problem going forward. So thank you all for coming, and I want to continue with the testifiers, and I believe we have Barb Starch, is it, registered nurse director from Pine Haven Care Center? Thank you, Barb. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My staff and I wrote up a letter, and I'm going to read it to you, and I believe most of you received copies of it. Adverse effects of the current nursing home payment plan in Minnesota. We provide the best care for our residents within our financial means at Pine Haven Care Center in Pine Island. However, we continue to find it increasingly difficult with the limited income we receive to provide quality care without cutting corners in other essential areas of operating our home. We have front doors that are 40 plus years old with cracked glass in them, and they are not handicap accessible. It is a struggle for any person who can walk to independently use them. It is impossible for our wheelchair residents to use the front doors independently. Our RNS transport drivers, who transport residents for us to and from clinic appointments, have expressed their concerns on this matter frequently over the past year. The estimated cost to update the front doors are $20,000. We do not have the funds to do this. Our resident rooms are very small, with 2 residents per room and 4 residents per bathroom. All of our resident bathrooms are very small and in need of updating to to accommodate our physically challenged residents who require assistance with toileting needs. You cannot take a resident into the bathroom and shut the door with a wheelchair and use it privately. Many of our tile floors are chipped, cracked, and stained. The cost of renovation is astronomical, and rebuilding is only attainable if we won the lottery. We have only 3 private rooms available to offer, and there's always a waiting list of at least 5 residents who prefer a private room. We have 68 residents total. Because of our rate deficiency, we at Pine Haven Care Center in Pine Island could no longer provide group health insurance to our employees after May 31st, 2007, due to the increase in premiums. We have lost 2 part-time RNs, 3 full-time LPNs, and at least 5 registered nursing assistants due to the loss of benefits. We have 3 full-time RNs, which is the rest of my RN staff, actively looking for other employment at this time so they have benefits, as their private policy health insurance for their families is costing them up to $1,200 per month. I also have 10 employees that I know of without any health insurance, and most of our registered nursing assistants qualify for Minnesota Care due to our low wages. We have a nursing staff of about 70 and a total staff at Pine Haven of 105. It is difficult to recruit new staff due to our lower wages, lack of benefits, and the increase in gas prices for staff who do not live in Pine Island. We are located 15 miles from Rochester and Mayo Clinic. It is a challenge to keep staff when RNs at Mayo receive at the minimum $10 more per hour than we can offer, and Mayo also offers benefits. Rochester nursing homes receive the metro rates to care for the same residents we do, and we get their overflow when they are full. They receive an average of $20 more per day per resident to provide the same quality care we do for the same type of resident. We also lose staff to Rochester nursing homes, as they can pay at a minimum $2 to $3 more per hour to registered nursing assistants and LPNs, plus benefits too, due to receiving the metro rates for resident care. And by the way, our nursing home is 2 miles from the Olmsted County line. At least 15% of our staff live in Rochester, and at least 40% shop in Rochester. Those who do pay the metro prices for groceries, housing, and services purchased in Rochester. The residents we admit continue to have more medical problems and need more skilled care due to the decreased hospital stays and our elderly living longer. At Pine Haven, we have 3 residents who are over 100 years of age, 25 who are over 90, and 26 who are over 80. We do not have the budget to hire sufficient staff to accommodate the needs of the referrals we receive for residents needing placement related to severe cognitive deficits. We need a secured, locked dementia care unit, but have no funds to build one or the staff to care for them. We receive referrals for these types of residents at least weekly, sometimes daily. And there was an article in the Rochester paper last night that Madonna Towers is building a 16-bed dementia care unit at the cost of $2.5 million. They were fortunate enough to receive a $1 million gift so they could build this. We continue to strive to provide quality care to our residents, many who are family and neighbors from Pine Island. That is what keeps us working here. We need your help to provide the funding necessary to give our elderly the excellent care they deserve and a safe, appealing, handicap accessible, user-friendly environment they deserve. Thank you for allowing me to bring some of our concerns to your attention.
Thank you, Barb. And I see that we do have time. We've stayed on time. We do have one more testifier to come up. I'm sorry, I have the name. I thought that was funny. Is it Deb Barnes from Parker Oaks Community?
Yes.
Okay, Deb.
Yeah. Thank you very much, and I'm very glad you're here today to listen to us. I have my license at two nursing homes, Winnebago and Mapleton, also regional director for some homes in the western part of the state for elder care in Minnesota. 10 years ago, 8 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, I would have agreed with some of the dummies here that we're in a crisis, but I don't agree any longer. I believe we're in collapse mode. I believe as surely as the bridge in the city's collapsed and needs relief effort now before the renewal of that bridge happens, we are in that same mode. We have collapsed completely. I'm going to give you a few numbers also. 18, that's the number of cents that most of my staff got as a raise last year. $912.52. That's the amount of money in one of my home's checking accounts today after paying payroll on Friday. 108, that's the amount of shifts open at one of my homes in October. $5.87, that's the amount we get paid per resident per hour. Per hour. We said 130, 135 per day. But I like to think in per hour. $5.87 per hour for safety, housing, laundry, meals, activities, housekeeping, nursing assistance, skilled professional and professional nursing care, and behind the scenes business needs. 15, the number of deficiencies one of my homes had this spring for insufficient paper. Nothing with actual care. 15 deficiencies for insufficient paperwork. 11, this has been said many times, the number of dollars that our nurses leave us for because they get that many more at the hospitals surrounding us. 100,000. $100,000, the cost of employee health insurance per year that we eliminated in one of our homes just to meet the other costs. And these are the two numbers that strike me the most and make me the most angry as a 30-year employee. 1978, when I started in the business, and I believe resident care was wonderful, was tremendous, was no different because the efforts of the people caring were no different than they are today. 1978, the number of full-time equivalent people that it took to complete the regulations and the requirements was 1.7. 1.7 full-time equivalents to bill self-pay, to bill medical assistance, to chart. Today, based on a 100-bed nursing home. Today, that number is 16. It takes 16 full-time equivalents to meet the regulations. So when I look at my career, I don't look at years as much as I look at agencies and new regs that we've survived. And it's gone up one or two every year of my career. So, from those three things we used to do in 78, we've added a huge survey process, care conferences, Medicare certification, PAS, case mix, MRAP, PSDA, insurance billing over RAPs, MBS, QA, OIG compliance, PMAP, Medicare PPS, CLIA aware, WIP, PAM, CERT, HIPAA privacy, NAR training, HIPAA security, Medicare B, MA RUGs, OBRA, ICD-9 changes, required dementia training, and DAVE. And in my mind, this is where all the dollars have gone. We have collapsed because of it. We are, as I said, in collapse mode. I know we need a renewed system, but I have done this many times, more than I can count, and we are where we are. So I am saying to all of you, God bless you for being here. God bless you for looking at this. Look at that renewal system. But before you do that, look at where we are today. and give us some kind of action and some kind of relief, just like the Department of Transportation is doing for the bridge. It is no different. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Barb. You certainly are helping us end on the sad but true note, and that is the sad situation that we face, ladies and gentlemen, in our nursing home industry today. And it is, how can we continue to be, after 30, 35, 40 years in this business for many of us, we're still in it and we're still fighting and grappling with so much regulation and so much paperwork and so few dollars and such a tremendous need to meet the dignity and of our elderly population and care for them. So I think I've spent my entire adult life in this area, and I'm very fortunate and pleased and honored to spend this time of my life in the legislature. So I can, all of you who testified, many of you and all of you who are here today who have been touched by this, please feel free to contact any one of us. And write to us, email us, call us, and maybe even come up and testify so that the other legislators at the Minnesota House of Representatives and the Senate, the senators, can hear this as well. Because we are, and I agree, in collapse. And I do equate our industry's problems today with the tragedy of the bridge and the tragedy of the flood. We are drowning. And for some reason, some of us have been able to hang on and hold on and continue to fight. So you have my pledge and the pledge of others as well, I'm sure, here today. And the industry, the unions, the workers, the residents' rights, all of us working together, because it's going to take all of us together to get something passed. I was absolutely mortified with the little bit of money that we did get. I had carried a bill, a good bill, of 5%. Representative Hosh had a 7.5%. We looked, we felt, and I think all the people at this table also felt the momentum, and really, this was not a pig in a poke. This was real concrete legislation that we were able to bring forth, and it was moving all the way, and it did have wheels. We need to keep the wheels back on it. We need to continue to move forward, and we need to help these people. We have to help these people. So thank you all for coming. I appreciate your time and your testimonies, which are so painful and so truthful. So anyone else? Does anyone else want to come up and say anything? I know Representative Hamilton's administrator is here. He drove all the way from out in western Minnesota, and I wanted to acknowledge that he's also here today. And did you want to come and add anything, or is there anything else to add? Yes, Representative Brown.
Thank you very much. And since Representative Hamilton's administrator is here, I did want to make sure that the committee and members of the audience know that Representative Hamilton, and also Representative Swigum, and a number of Representative Finstead, myself, and a number of people on our side of the aisle, and this is, again, I think there's a lot of agreement on this issue, but have worked very hard. And Representative Hamilton, in fact, put an amendment on the House floor that was voted down, as did the others that have mentioned, to add more money into the system. But I did want to make mention to his administrator that he is there fighting for you, fighting for nursing homes, as are others in the legislature.
Thank you, Representative.
Yeah, we'd like the speaker to make mention of the regulations. And, you know, that was, he really relieved us. We are so overregulated. I'm an LPN.
Why don't you come up and introduce yourself, please? Thank you.
My name is Mary Hill, and I've been doing this since my first job out of high school. But I've been at Three Links now 5 years. And since I started there 5 years ago, the number of RNs has multiplied, and it's all about this regulation. We are so overly regulated. We spend, like this woman said, so much of our dollars, so much of our precious time doing this redundant, ridiculous, overbearing, outrageous paperwork. And we don't have time to touch people anymore. And we who love our old folks and care for them and are passionate about taking care of them, it's got to stop. Well, when will it stop? And the surveyors come in, it's like a Gestapo coming. And you know, there's hardly any way that we are in reality capable of doing everything that is said on the paper. We don't have staff, we don't have time, we don't have funds, and we're tired. And we need something to look forward to. We have no raises. My own self, I take home $120 less every month because of my health insurance increase. There's many of us work more than one job to make ends meet. There's a lot of single moms there. They have childcare, they have children. It's got to stop. We love our old folks. They deserve respect and good care, and we give that. And we are not recognized, and we are not compensated, and we're getting verbal about it, and it's about time. You know, I've been doing this since I was 18, and my raises, you know, nothing has changed. The benefits, everything is just going in the opposite direction, and we deserve better. Thank you.
Thank you again, all of you, for such passion. It's coming from all of our hearts, and we all know that. Thank you, Representative Broad, for your comment. And also, Representative Hosh has something he'd like to add.
I'm not looking for an answer to this question, but I'm thinking this is something that we should look into, or maybe it's because I'm naive on the subject, but with the regulations and the mandates that are put on the nursing homes, how many of them are federal mandates, how many of them are state mandates, and how can we have an influence in that as legislators? And I don't expect the answer today, but I think that's something we should look at.
I think a lot of the mandates are federal, but it's the state that actually does the survey and the surveying process. So I know one person that suggested to me at one of our nursing homes that maybe one way to make the process work better, and instead of it being, as you said, like the Gestapo coming in, that it be a better working relationship, is to have people on the surveying teams who have actually worked in the nursing homes, and maybe for a certain period of time, so that they see their role as being partners, not so much as a boss kind of relationship, but more of a partner kind of relationship, not coming in trying to catch people doing things wrong or trying to catch defective things, but actually trying to work with them to just make it a better place for the senior citizens they're caring for.
Anyone from testifying, so we do have time. We paid close attention to the clock, and I would like to ask if anyone who hasn't testified, you had your hand up. Yes, would you like to come up?
I would love to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Kathy Fodness. I'm with SEIU Healthcare in Minnesota. In fact, these are our members of this great nursing home. Just two quick comments for you. First of all, concessionary bargaining is not fun. And that's what we face with the plane that we're on in our nursing homes. You go to the table and both parties are in a bad situation, and we end up battling over keeping the benefits that we have. And it's not good for our members, it's not good for management, and it's certainly not good for the residents. And the other thing that I will say is, when legislation is written that gives a voice to the increased benefit cost for the employer, and that increased cost is allowed to be taken out of the COLA, things like this happens. We have a group of nurses at Maplewood Good Samaritan whose compensation package was zero, because those increased benefits were allowed to be taken out of that COLA. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else want to come up and have a few words? Yes, Camille.
Just one other quick thing that we did a time study on. We were talking about the cost and the time involved. with someone coming into the nursing home. Nursing homes aren't like they used to be. It used to be grandma would go there and she'd stay there until she died, okay? Now grandma breaks her hip, she goes there, rehabs, and then goes back to assisted living and goes to her apartment. So the time in nursing homes is a lot shorter than it used to be. So we're seeing a higher influx of residents in and residents back out. We did a study last year on one new admission. It took 28 hours of paperwork, staff time, to do a new admission, okay? So if you take that, you take a facility that used to do 90 admissions a year, now they're doing 150, 175, multiply that out, see how much more staff it takes just to keep the paperwork somewhat compliant.
But again, this is it's a multifaceted problem. You know, it's just fractured. It's smashed, actually. So we need to, it's almost like Humpty Dumpty. We've got to pick this up again, and we've got to glue it back together. And I think we all have the will to do that. And that's such a cross-section of people here. I know that we do have residents' families here. I hope that they're all taking this in. And I know the pain that they feel when they come to visit their loved one and the light isn't being answered fast enough. And, you know, we go on, we can go on and on and on in social services, then gets them in their office and the tears flow and the anger erupts and nothing gets accomplished. So hopefully we can go forward and find good solutions to this difficult problem. Thank you again for coming, and all of us, the legislators that are here, I hope will kind of hang around a little bit because we do have some time. There's refreshments back there, but we'll see if you want to come up and talk to us individually, and we'd love to talk to you. And again, thank you all for coming. I appreciate this, and thank you, Brad. Thank you, St. Lucas. Tammy Heimer, I want to make sure you meet my director of nurses back here in the corner, and my co-workers.
I just want to say that the one disappointment I have is we didn't hear any stories about Patty, so we're also going to be around for the Christmas story.